Recognized as an AVA in 1981, the Santa Cruz Mountains was the first California appellation to be defined by its mountain topography. Today, the wine-growing community comprises nearly 300 small growers and winery. The region is planted evening among Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay and other varietals, most notably Merlot and Zinfandel. The wines come from a high-altitude small vineyard surrounded by redwood trees growing atop an ancient seabed overlooking the Pacific Ocean. This growing condition gives the wine a distinctive regional identity characterized by fresh flavor, bright fruit, and minerality. With today's guest, Prudy Fox, the leading viticulturist of the Santa Cruz Mountain, we explore this fascinating region that unfortunately over the years has lagged behind Napa Valley and Mendocino with consumers, but in recent years has had some major investment and is growing up in interest. Prudy discussed how the microclimate is so important in the region compared to many others, and how the region can be divided from east-facing and west-facing, and the altitude, how it affects the region, and much more. Hi, I'm Mattia Scarpazza, and this is the Looking Into Wine podcast. Wine and winemaking can be complex, but this podcast has a simple mission. We want to give you the skills and tools to harness your passion about wine. Through this series, we will shine a spotlight on some of the different regions, processes, and concepts that shape the fascinating world of wine. I hope you enjoy the show and your own journey looking into wine. Welcome to Looking Into Wine. I'm Mattia Scarpazza, and today's guest is an experienced biologist and viticulturist. She served as the president of the Viticulture Association of the Santa Cruz Mountains from 2003 and 2006. She's a founding member of the Technical Session Committee of the Pinot Noir Paradise event, put annually on by the Santa Cruz Wine Growing Association. And in 2014, she became a member of a board member of the Santa Cruz Wine Growing Association. In 1997, she founded her viticulture agency based in Santa Cruz Mountain. Now she works with over 80 wineries across the region, advising from new planting to harvest decisions. Welcome to the podcast, Prudy Fox.
Hello, welcome. Thank you.
Cam, it's good to have you here, and it's super exciting to speak about the Santa Cruz Mountain. So I know you arrived in the Santa Cruz Mountain working for Bonnie Doone as a viticulturist. What made you stay in the region of Santa Cruz?
Well, that's a good question. I had never really looked at it exactly that way. What got me into the wine world and the world of viticulture in the first place was this concept that wine starts in the vineyard. Since I actually started out as an environmental scientist with a degree in environmental communication, my whole goal being, of course, to save the world along with everyone else and in the environmental movement and make things better, especially in agriculture. But I was also a winemaker, and I was working at a winery and noticed the grapes coming in were at that time, and that was in Washington State, of horrible quality. And I wondered what was going on in the vineyards, and I went out in the vineyards, and this would be back in the early 80s. I like to say I started when I was two. things were happening at that time. A lot of viticulture that was happening was sort of word of mouth, and especially in Washington, where we didn't have the history of viticulture the way we did, even in California and especially in Europe. We didn't really have that generational knowledge, and so the word of mouth stuff wasn't all that accurate. And so I dedicated myself to combining the mystery of wine and the mystery of viticulture with science, because I'm, like it or not, I'm an incredibly practical person. And I just have to base my decisions in reality or the reality of science as it stands right now. I do want to add the caveat that science is always discovering new things. And so even in my career, definitely proofs that I took for granted and absolutely based decisions on have changed over time, and they continue. So I encourage everyone in viticulture and wine to keep an open mind and realize there's so much we don't know, as many people, especially the wine industry, completely lends itself to the kind of profession where the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And so it's, you've got to be on a quest.
Great message there. I think it's fantastic, and it's good to have an open mind.
Yeah.
So obviously you have been working in the Santa Cruz for over 25-30 years now, and you probably one of the most expert in the whole region, and also because you work with the various sites and various area of the Santa Cruz. So as a viticulturist, what do you look for when you decide to have a new planting, and what, especially for the Santa Cruz, what are the decisions to have a good site?
What sets Santa Cruz apart is, it's its faults. We're in the middle. We have a fault line that goes straight down the middle of our AVA, and we're actually two separate tectonic plates, if you can imagine. So when we talk about what brings Santa Cruz together, we talk about really an incredible diversity. So looking at sites in Santa Cruz, there is no one size fits all, but definitely I think maxims or important things that anyone should look at really on any site is, how well does the soil drain? That's one of the most important things you should always look at. People focus a lot on whether it's sand or clay or what kind of rock is there. All of that's important, but what it all boils down to is, the reason it's important is, how well does it drain? How well does it hold water? And how quickly does it heat up and cool down? What kind of thermal mass? What are the physical qualities of that soil? And then you get into being the more detailed stuff of, how old is that soil and where did it come from and what's its origin and all those things. So when I look at a site, I look first for drainage, then potentials, water holding capacity. I definitely look around, and the Santa Cruz Mountains were filled with forest. Santa Cruz Mountains, I think people who don't come to California tend to think of California as LA and the Hollywood sign. And people don't realize how much of California is an incredibly beautiful, expansive natural environment filled with, in our case, redwood trees, coastal redwood, which is unique to the entire world. You don't find coastal redwoods really anywhere else except Northern California along the coast, and maybe a few very isolated other places or where people have started to grow them. And that's because we get this fog off the Monterey Bay, combined with the folding. If you can imagine a piece of fabric, this is how we try to describe this. When the North American plate and the Pacific plate are basically sliding past each other, and that's right where Santa Cruz is, that's the San Andreas Fault. They're not really running into each other, they're actually sliding past each other. And in that process, they push together. Every now and then they have little things that parts of their plate that jut out, and those run into each other. And when that happens, it folds up like a blanket. So the Santa Cruz Mountains is just a series of folds that end up being little mountaintops. We probably have 300, 400 little mountaintops that all at the tops are anywhere from 1,500 to, at the height, I think 2,800 feet is, I mean, there's a few extremes on either side, but for the most part, when you talk about mountaintops in the Santa Cruz Mountains, you're running between 1,400 and 2,500 feet elevation.
It's quite one of the highest area of California. Is the Santa vineyard wise, like for the vineyards and the like plant.
Yeah, I think Napa and there are other places. Sierra Foothills probably puts in a. I haven't thought of it that way, but that could be it. It's mostly just having these mountaintops, but then how they go down. So they're still covered with redwoods. I always look for southeast facing, south facing. And if I can't get that kind of aspect, then I look for what am I going to plant there? So, for example, way up on those higher places, I've actually put Pinot Noir. I put it on the north facing slope so that it doesn't get that intense afternoon sun. So anyway, those are some of the things.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. So I imagine that the soils are very diverse throughout the region, having these faults working together. Or there's like, is there any sort of underlying type of soil that you find around the area?
Yes. There's quite a lot of cemented sandstone on the west side, mostly metamorphic and sedimentary rocks. And it goes between, it's a really interesting combination of having some areas like in the Bonnie Doon area that are marine benchlands that they rise up out of the ocean and they actually used to be the bottom of the ocean. Whereas you have other areas that are like in the Corralitos area that are colluvial soils, which means they've all fallen down and settled from higher spots, but they're still quite high up themselves, 400, 600 feet on their way to the ocean. And they're a real mix of soils. We have a few granites, but that's way less common. It's mostly on the east side, we actually get into some metamorphized rock, even some volcanic rock that isn't really a volcano, but it's actually metamorphic in the sense that it came from the depths of the earth and then bubbled out in different places. So we have these mm-hmm. red soils. Bates Ranch is an example of that. And so it's fascinating how diverse it is.
I was looking at the map of the wineries and the vineyards. I mean, the region is quite big. You have Los Angeles in the north and you have the ocean on the east. But the region seems quite big, but all the winery, they all seem to be on a sort of line across the region. Is there any, like, most of the wineries, they seem to be running from along the same line. Is there a particular reason for that? Is that the highest part?
Yes, it is within an elevation. The original founders of the Santa Cruz Mountains AVA, Dave Bennion, from one of the original founding members of Ridge Vineyards, Ken Burnap from the Santa Cruz Mountain Winery, along with a couple of other guys, actually drove around what they believed would be the perimeter of what became the Santa Cruz Mountain AVA, and they observed vegetation and what kind of vegetation grew within a certain microclimate, shall we say, or macroclimate in this case. And when they noticed the manzanita started growing in the oak and then into the redwoods, that's where they established this line. And they noticed this vegetation on the west side, the Pacific side of the AVA, which is mostly Santa Cruz County and San Mateo County. That starts at 400 feet elevation. And then the east side, which is mostly Santa Clara County, and some parts of Santa Cruz County, that is the 800, starts at 800 foot elevation. The logic being on the east side of the little Santa Cruz Mountains, because even those little mountains at 3,000 feet can still block the fog and the cooling influence of the Pacific Ocean and be much warmer in the inland valley. So on the east side, you need to be up higher to get the cool temperatures. And on the west side, you can be lower because you have that cooling influence of our big bathtub called the Monterey Bay.
I've come across that before. It's fantastic. And so as a style of wine produced in the region, obviously, because you're talking a high altitude and the influence from the ocean, what sort of grape do you find? Are you planting and you finding that have been very successful in the area?
Definitely, you know, Santa Cruz, again, is a really interesting place in that it has its diversity. I keep coming back to it. It's what what brings us together are our differences. On the west side, again, being such a dramatically different growing environment, and that being, again, because of the giant Monterey Bay, which almost, how do I describe it, a big thumb that sticks down, is a very protected area, although we definitely get big storms, but protected from the major storms of the Pacific Ocean, brings in this fog and this cooling influence. And so it's a Mediterranean climate and perfect for Pinot Noir in particular and Chardonnay on the west side. And that is because, in general, our temperatures don't go over 88, 90 at the most, and they cool down at night to the 50s, even in June, July. And it's like a facial. I call it a facial. When the fog comes in, it sort of bathes the grapes and the vines in this beautiful, soft, foggy mist. And then it slowly drifts away every morning and burns off by 10 a.m. and dries off with these soft, beautiful breezes that come in off the bay. And it's like a facial. If you're a girl, anyone who does a facial could know. I wonder how cleansing that is. And Pinot Noir in particular, which has such delicate skins, particularly benefits from perfect skin. Pinot Noir the perfect skin of Pinot Noir lends to a beautiful, beautiful wine. And so for that reason, I believe the west side of Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz Mountains, thrives in this environment. Whereas on the east side, there are pockets that still experience this. Thomas Fogarty is an example where they get quite a lot of influence from the San Francisco Bay. So they still benefit from that fog, even though they might be considered more on the east side of the AVA. They do a beautiful Pinot Noir. Some of Ridge, for example, can do their fantastic Cabernet Sauvignon because of their incredible exposure to sunlight and heat. And even though it's up high, it's cool enough to still maximize their flavors, but still enough heat units to ripen their Cabernet Sauvignon. So that's why we can excel in these diverse varietals.
Yeah, I'm picturing it as a sort of like small little, I mean, I saw the picture, I saw like small little pockets of vineyard, very different to any, most of the picture you see from like Napa Valley, where it's all flat and it's very different. It must be very, I mean, as a region, it started in the 90s. And how many hectares do you have in more or less? Is size-wise, how big is the Santa Cruz?
I think we've figured out at this point we have around 1,500, maybe as much as 2,000 acres planted, certainly no more than that. That's total. And the AVA actually started much earlier than that. They started establishing those lines in the 60s, and I believe it became an official AVA in the early 80s. I have to look back. But it didn't really take off till the 90s. We had pockets of success prior to that, and then in the 90s, a tremendous new planting came in, kind of on the heels of when Napa replanted due to phylloxera. We've been fortunate. We don't have a lot of phylloxera in our area. And it could be because we have such, all of our vineyards are so small and self-contained that we don't share a lot of equipment the way maybe the bigger valley vineyards do.
Okay, well, it's very diverse to what you expect for the rest of California. And I know you've been working a lot in the area that you mentioned before. It's called, pardon me if I say it wrong, but it's Corralitos,
yeah, right.
Corralitos, and it's becoming famous, particularly famous for the Pinot Noir and the Chardonnay. Where is that, and why is so suitable for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay?
Because we love our Pinot Noir and Chardonnay so much, and it's because again we're on that beautiful. This is Corralitos, California, is in the southernmost region of the Santa Cruz Mountain AVA. And the vineyards in our area are between 400, start at 400 feet elevation and go up to about 1,200. I think Windy Oaks is probably one of the higher ones in the Corralitos area. Lester Family Vineyards is around 500 feet. Saveria 600, kind of goes up this beautiful slope. Very well cared for, all of them between Regan, all of them between maybe 10 acres, 10 to 30 acres, which is kind of the perfect number. It's a small, but it's the perfect number to have your own small group of people who are dedicated to those particular sites. I work with, as I said earlier, many, many different vineyards, but the way I do it is I make sure that each vineyard has sort of its own dedicated people, or at least one person who absolutely is committed to that particular piece of property and really knows the grapes. But more than that, in terms of just the terroir of the area, it's definitely because of that cooling, moderating influence of the Monterey Bay, that beautiful fog that comes in and cleanses the grapes, and the fact that we don't get too hot and we don't get too cold. We're just right. Goldilocks.
What was your most compelling vineyard to work with, like something like a vineyard that you were surprised at how good it performed? You don't have to say the name of the producer, otherwise I know.
you're asking me to pick my favorite son. I'm not allowed to do that. It is funny, just like children, as I joke with people, you have favorites at different times. You know, sometimes one shines over another, but you love them all. And that is exactly how I feel about the vineyards. I think I just sort of rattled off a bunch. I think one that has absolutely surprised me and rewarded me hugely is the Bates Ranch, which is actually just on the other side of Corralitos on what we call the Gilroy area, and doing its Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc. I was 100,000% committed to Burgundy and Burgundian wines until I started working with Bates and really saw what the Santa Cruz Mountains could do. On the Coralito side, I started the Lester Vineyard from an empty old apple orchard, and that's been an incredibly rewarding experience. And Saveria, the same, Christie Vineyard, yeah.
Well, it sounds so interesting. Like you can have a Cabernet Sauvignon and a Pinot Noir all growing. I think like the key is to have understanding the microclimate, because there is very different from what you've been telling me. The microclimate is,
I think it's, I think it's very much understanding the microclimate and also understanding the grape and seeing what the grape wants to do. Because I don't buy into any one way to do anything. And I think that's a very important part to growing grapes. That's why I don't really like the term farming grapes. When you're talking viticulture, I'm talking about growing. And I tried for a long time to get people to just call us growers instead of farmers. But then, of course, the cannabis thing came in and those guys get to be growers and we don't get to be growers. So, OK, fine. But but it is this idea that you put the grape in a place it loves to grow, and then you watch how it grows, and then you give it the structure and support to grow in that way. So in other words, if you have a lot of heat, then you don't take off too many leaves. And if you have a lot of fog, then you do take off some leaves right around the fruit zone so the clusters don't get too crowded. And you understand that Pinot Noir especially doesn't like to be crowded. Pinot Noir likes her space. I mean, I've often anthropomorphized these grapes and saying Pinot Noir is a woman. She likes her space. She's very moody. She's very picky. Could be men are like that too. I'll try to be political. Whereas the Cabernet, in my opinion, is the more traditional masculine, puts up with a lot more sun and sort of wants all that challenge. So you just sort of give them what they want, and most of all, you honor the soil. We never use herbicides. That's one of my main tenets that I start with people, is we completely eliminate herbicides. We only manage, and a weed is in the eye of the beholder. What some people call weeds is simply ground cover. It's all about, does it impede airflow? Does it compete with the grapes? Why is it there? Try kind of looking at things like, why are they there and why should they be there?
Absolutely, and it makes sense. I completely agree about the herbicides, thankfully there's been some area around the world that they start banning some of the most aggressive herbicides altogether as a whole region. So I think that's a very good movement there. And for you, where are you seeing coming? What's new then you think is coming out from the mountain? Is there any new areas that have been explored? And as I have you here and I'm trying to get what's new happening in the area?
Well, I mean, there's always a new little area getting sort of hacked out. I mean, we just had these horrible fires, which were devastating, especially in the Bonnie Dune and Big Basin area. But I can't help but wonder if some new vineyards will emerge from those, because the trees were burned and it actually opened up, and it's going to open up a lot of potential area that we would never have even considered growing anything because it was covered with forest. I actually personally live on a 172 acre piece of property that's a forest that was clear cut in the 80s and was planted to a vineyard that then was overgrown by redwood again. So redwood grows really, really fast in our area. But if you do keep it down, you can do something with it. So that it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. I haven't really heard anyone talk about that, but I was just in that area and sort of wondered what its future is. Something that we are doing that's an exciting project is a new vineyard way up on the summit, the area we call the summit. And it's, I believe, at 2,800 feet, and it's above Coralitos, if you can imagine. So we're kind of in the southern part of the AVA, but you're actually straddling the fault line, Loma Prieta. You're on Loma Prieta Mountain. One side is Santa Clara County, one side is Santa Cruz County. And there's a vineyard up there called Lago Lomita. That's a new vineyard established maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and by Mark and Robin Porter. And we got together up there, and they wanted to do something interesting. And that's actually the vineyard where I managed to where we put the Pinot Noir on the north side because it was so blazing hot up there that any southern exposure was much too hot for Pinot Noir, but there's sort of a protected area. And then on the very top, for whatever reason, I've always tried to grow Nebbiolo. That's sort of the holy grail. I always want to grow Nebbiolo. I've tried it in three different places in the mountains. It hasn't really worked. But in this spot, I can't say it reminded me of the Piedmonte, that's because any of my Italian friends wouldn't like that, but because it certainly doesn't have the Pyrenees back there. But somehow the way, just standing up on the top, the peak there of Loma Prieta and looking over the Monterey Bay, I thought maybe it can work here where it's both hot and cold. And that's kind of what Nebbiolo does, I think, in great exposure. So we put Nebbiolo right at the top of their property, right at the peak, and it's been fantastic. And Soquel Vineyards produces their Nebbiolo, and they just won a best of class at the San Francisco Chronicle tastings, and several other, I believe Wine Enthusiast also gave it a high number. So that's been a really exciting project. When you say what's new, I think going for some of these Italian varietals, and to even taking into account the global warming, we're doing a little Cabernet Franc in Corralitos, in one of the hotter areas of Corralitos, because Cabernet Franc is a somewhat misunderstood grape, and can actually, as long as you can ripen it, can actually do well in a less traditional climate.
Talking about these grape varieties, obviously Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and you mentioned Cabernet Sauvignon, Nebbiolo. What else is being planted at the moment with success? I know that you have Bondi Dundan, it was just like Syrah, Grenache, Southern Rhone grapes. Well, is there any?
Yeah, that's actually changed. Randall has left Bonny Doon, sadly. And it's Ryan Beauregard. It's the Beauregard family are the primary growers on Ben Lomond Mountain now. And they do a beautiful job, but they primarily have Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. Beautiful, beautiful versions of that. That is actually one of the few areas that is pure granite. Ben Lomond Mountain is extremely different than most of the Santa Cruz Mountains. We used to live up there. My husband's a geologist, and we used to joke that that's where the geologists all live because it's granite and it doesn't move in the same way as the rest. There's also threads of limestone, but that's sort of not traditional. It's not really the same as the limestone in Burgundy, so I don't usually dwell on that. There is a section, they call it the home ranch at Beauregard, that has Zinfandel, which is beautiful. Zinfandel being another completely underrated and when made properly. Ridge Vineyards made a version of the Zinfandel for a couple of years, and they did it in this beautiful, light way that not overworked. So those are some options.
Yeah, I mean, I was telling you before that I've been trying some of the wine from Santa Cruz, and they had this freshness and the fruit, and it's very different. Not very different. I don't want to generalize the whole California. I can't do that, but I think as a style, it's a bit more fresher and like distinctive of the wine from Santa Cruz.
I think that could come from the bay. I really think that influence of that fog and that wind and that influence of the bay is huge for that freshness.
Yeah, and have you seen any new? Because as a region, it's quite difficult to get into. Have you seen any new producers and more interest of people coming from other parts of California trying to come to Santa Cruz? And is that something you've seen?
Oh, definitely. We definitely have received a great deal of interest from outside of the region, people coming down off and on. You can imagine our local producers feel like they're not chopped liver, so they need the recognition as well. I mean, some of the big companies, Jackson Family Vineyards, Calera, they're wanting to move in. Some of the smaller, notable producers, Jamie Cooch, Kutch, the Pax is well known, John mm-hmm. Raytech, Leoco Wines, some Trail Marker. Maybe they're not quite as well established. Leoco is getting a little more recognition. Are coming in smaller producers, young man named Nicholas Vonderhayden, who is actually from Bordeaux, I think he's doing a fantastic job. He has his own label now called Arion. You probably haven't heard of it yet, but I think you will. He's doing an absolutely stunning job with our fruit.
I think that the region is very very exciting, and unfortunately, it's still a bit difficult with like consumers and recognition compared to like Napa or Sonoma. But I think if you've seen there is more movement and things like that, and I can see more article about it, and I think it would be something to look at and to keep an eye out for, especially for the Pinot Noir. So definitely I'm going to try to look for some of those.
Okay. I think our producers are so much more skilled now. It's just learning how to handle these grapes without being so aggressive. I think that is the key to Pinot Noir and really many of these thin-skinned grapes is just to not be so aggressive in the handling of them, not to press them too hard, not to punch them down too much, just to respect the skins and how much the skins, the anthocyanins, the phenolics that exist right around the skins, being more respectful of that in both growing and producing.
Thank you so much for this half an hour. I really got very excited about the region, and I can see a lot of different area, and I really appreciate your time here today, and I could see your vision as a viticulturist when you start talking about the grape, and then it was very interesting listening to you. So once again, thank you for your for coming here today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. I so appreciate it. Love sharing.
And once again, is Prudy Fox, and she runs a viticulture agency in Santa Cruz Mountain from 1997. And yeah, thank you. Thank you for being here.
Be well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Today's guest is Prudy Fox, shining a spotlight on Santa Cruz Mountains in California. Remember to hit the subscribe button and to tell your friends about the podcast. Also, be sure to go to mattiascarpazza.com and to subscribe to the mailing list. It's the only way you can listen to the Pressage, the after-interview conversation with the guest. You can find Looking Into Wine on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and every imaginary listening app. You can reach me on social media on Twitter, Mattia Scarpazza, Instagram, Mattia.lookingintowine, and Facebook, Looking Into Wine. If you enjoy the podcast, you can donate for the growth of it on mattiascarpazza.com. And music produced by Samuele Di Nardo, editing and mastering by Tommaso Ascoli.